Welcome to this episode of Modern Practice, where you get a curbside consult from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we're hearing from my colleague who makes it his specialty to delve into complex, bewildering, thousand-page federal laws. My guest is Jim Riley. Jim, tell us about yourself and your key role here at Vizient.
Hey, Tom. Nice to be with you here today. I'm a senior principal for the SG2 consulting practice, and the areas within healthcare that I oversee are in the value-based care and physician alignment space. Mm-hmm. So it does require me to work with the government on several different programs, interpret federal laws and regulations. And so that gives you a little background about what we're going to talk about here today.
Thanks, Jim, and I really appreciate you spending the time with us. So Jim, on a previous podcast, we got a pretty good overview of what the CARES Act is. And on this particular episode, I want to put a lot more concentration and reference to access to funding for our members. So I'd like to dive right in if you don't mind. What has the federal government made available to our hospitals right now?
Well, you know, I would first say, Tom, that Congress has made a valiant effort to make funds available to the industry to help with hospital liquidity and short-term financial challenges. And so there are really four components within the work they've done that I think are applicable and relevant to healthcare providers. First, CMS has expanded the Medicare Accelerated and Advance Payment Program due to the pandemic. It's a program that's actually been around for quite some time, but they have streamlined the process and reduced processing time for funds to 4 to 6 days from 3 to 4 weeks where it's been historically. Now, these funds come right from the Medicare Trust Fund to providers, and they are a cash advance. So Medicare will recoup these dollars down the road. But hospitals can request up to 6 months of historical Medicare fee-for-service payments to help with cash flow issues. And physician practices can request up to 3 months of historical Medicare fee-for-service payments. And those funds don't need to be paid back for approximately a year. So that could really help with liquidity issues. Secondly, Tom, the Public Health and Social Security Emergency Fund, this is the pool of $100 billion that you hear about so much in the industry and in the news. It was created from the CARES Act. And this is a grant that goes to providers that does not need to be repaid. It's for lost revenues and incremental expenses attributed to COVID-19 care. Three, Paycheck Protection Program. This is administered by the Small Business Association and was initially funded with $350 billion. These loans are forgivable if providers use it for qualified expenses. And the real purpose of it is to keep employees employed and whole on the payrolls of these healthcare providers. And providers can request up to $10 million or 2.5 months of average monthly payroll costs. And then finally, there's the Main Street Lending Program. This program hasn't been released formally, but it's in the works, and it's another $600 billion of funding for mid-sized businesses, 10,000 employees to $2.5 billion. It's not clear how many hospitals will qualify because they haven't produced the affiliation rules yet, but I think those are the real four bodies within the federal government's work, including the CARES Act, that are applicable to providers.
So Jim, thank you for that. So, I mean, that's a lot to take in on these four components that not only deal with organizations or large health systems, but also by providers. I think you're also meaning physicians groups?
That's exactly right. Yeah, physician practices, when I use the term providers, are included and eligible for each of the components that I just described.
So you mentioned that in some of these cases that the money's available, but are these funds available now? Many practices are actually struggling right now.
Yeah, the Medicare Accelerated and Advance Payment Program is available right now. Streamlined process, Tom, where you can receive funds within 7 days, which can be really helpful for struggling practices and for hospitals. For the Public Health and Social Security Emergency Fund, $30 billion has already been distributed. It began April 10th, and we should hear this week about the plans for the remaining $70 billion. Some are even predicting that a portion of that will be distributed by the end of this week as well. The Paycheck Protection Program started April 3rd and is open until June 30. That program, however, as we understand, has been very popular in businesses across the country, including physician practices. and may get through their allotted funds by this week. So we know Medicare's working on, or the government's working on, another $250 billion to replenish that fund. And then we expect the Main Street Lending Program, which is not available yet,
right,
details to be announced here shortly.
So what we're hearing is that the money is available now. That's fantastic news. But million-dollar question, Jim, literally, how do you get access to these funds?
That's right. slightly different process for each of these four programs. For the Accelerated Advance Payment Program from the Medicare Trust Fund, providers will complete a request form from their Medicare administrative contractor. There are about a dozen MACs, as they're called, Tom, across the country, organized regionally. These are the entities that pay providers for their health care for Medicare patients. These Medicare administrative contractors have the forms providers need. Matter of fact, we emailed one, Noridian, who manages California, Nevada, and Hawaii this week, and we got a form in 15 minutes. So really easy access. Basic information too, Tom, identification and characteristics of your company, the reason you need the funds, and then a certification saying that you're eligible for these funds. So very easy process there for the accelerated advance. For the Public Health and Social Security Emergency Fund, to date, no application has been required. Medicare has direct deposited these funds directly to hospitals and physician practices. Now, if I'm an individual physician practice, I shouldn't expect monies being direct deposited into my individual account. These are paid by tax identification number, so it will go to the group's central business office. If you're employed by a health system, it'll go to your group's 10. If I'm an independent practice, it'll go to my group practice 10. And so those are how those dollars are received. The Paycheck Protection Program does require a short application working with a local bank that's affiliated with a small business association. And then we don't know yet on the Main Street Lending Program, but we do anticipate an application from a bank who's participating in that program with the government.
So that's good to know. The process is easy. And in some cases, it's actually occurring automatically when it comes to for TINs under group practices as well, or physicians practice. So what kind of organizations are eligible?
Well, the Medicare Advance and Accelerated Payments are available to Part A providers, including hospitals, and Part B providers, including physicians, as well as durable medical equipment suppliers. There are a few terms. For example, I would have had to have needed to bill Medicare 180 days prior to my request. I'm not in bankruptcy. I'm not under active medical review. And I don't have any outstanding delinquent Medicare overpayments. But essentially, you've got all Part A and Part B providers available for those funds. Same thing for the Public Health and Social Security Emergency Program. If I've received Medicare fee-for-service payments in 2019 and post January 31, I have provided or I may provide care to COVID-19 patients and I'm not terminated from the Medicare program, I'm eligible for these funds. Now, for the loan programs, the Paycheck Protection and the Main Street Lending, it's defined by the number of employees that I have. So the Paycheck Protection, you will need to have less than 500 employees to be eligible. And for the Mid-Sized Business Lending Program, less than 10,000 employees. And so those are the definitions and who might be eligible for the funds that are currently available.
So there are very limited areas where there's an exclusion to the money itself.
That's right.
All right. That's actually wonderful news. But, you know, when you're dealing with our members at Vizient, we actually deal with a lot of public hospitals that take care of a lot of the uninsured and low income. Are there any special consideration for them?
There are, Tom. The first tranche of funds released by Medicare, the $30 billion under the Public Health and Social Security Emergency Fund, Medicare distributed those dollars based on your historical Medicare spend, not on the number of COVID-19 patients that I'm caring for or have care for or I'm expected to care for.
Oh.
It wasn't driven by my financial needs. It was simply pro rata based on my ratio of fee-for-service charges versus total fee-for-service charges. And there was a fair amount of criticism around that distribution process. I think Congress was trying to get the monies out quickly, and that's the process they came with. So in the next tranche of funds, they are paying particular attention to areas with severe COVID-19 outbreaks,
right?
Rural providers, those who serve a Medicaid population, and maybe less Medicare to help with a safety net for those hospitals, and safety net hospitals will be prioritized. So I think we're going to see it be more sensitive to need based on just my historical Medicare activity. We should hear the details around that as early as this week, Tom.
So I understand that. So in other words, they're making an effort just to kind of say a blanket way of dealing with it in the first wave. And then considering it was only just when you think about the country as a whole, just really a small population of large metropolitan cities that were affected during this particular pandemic, then dealing with additional dollars for them.
We should see a high percentage of the dollars going to those severe outbreak areas and markets that are more significantly impacted, Tom. So you got that exactly right.
Huh. And what about AMCs? Any specific consideration towards them?
No specific consideration to the AMCs. They'll be considered with all other providers in how these funds are distributed. So if they are in a high outbreak area for COVID-19, they'll be treated consistently with other providers in the marketplace.
So you mentioned that all expenses are covered because they're just covering what your usual dollars that you would get during a specific amount of time. But are there any specific expenses that will not be covered by these dollars?
Yeah, but you do have to pay attention to what these dollars are going to be used for and track and document your activity in this area. So predominantly, Tom, the dollars are for lost revenues associated with COVID-19 and incremental expenses. So for lost revenues, that could mean I've deferred elective surgeries for some time. That's a significant loss of revenue for a lot of hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, all my ambulatory care, imaging, testing, physician clinics, restricted hours we've seen for physicians, a significant drop in ancillary services, and limited E&M visits and patient visits, or those that have been converted to telehealth,
right?
All of those losses in revenue should be assessed, accounted for, and those what those dollars are for. On the expense side, think about the preparedness and training for physicians, nursing, and admin staff to deal with this outbreak, overtime costs of essential staff, increasing costs for environmental services, central supply, acquiring personal protection equipment. That's what these funds are designed for. So where we can't use the funds on an expense that is expected to be reimbursed from another source, we must also agree by taking these funds not to balance bill patients who are COVID-19 or fall into one of the 8 DRGs that COVID-19 care falls under. And then there are some other unique strings. Of course, there's always strings to grants, as you know, Tom. And so things like we can't use the money for lobbying, embryo research, gun control, unpaid taxes, and things like that. So within 30 days of receiving the funds, providers will get a long list of terms that they'll agree to. But that gives you an idea of things that you can use the money for and things that you can't.
So it's mostly for the purposes of any loss of productivity or operational losses. You've mentioned about reference to balance billing for COVID patients to avoid that. And there are other specific areas that our members need to be very cognizant in actually receiving these monies.
That's right. I'll touch on quickly too, but also the loans that could be forgivable under the Paycheck Protection Program, that's largely for maintaining your employees. And so the dollars used there, while it can be used for rent and utility, its primary purpose is to keep employees on the payroll and keep them whole. So dollars that aren't associated in those buckets will have to be paid back to the bank that we're getting loans from. Dollars used for those areas are forgivable. And same with Main Street lending. It is using reasonable efforts to retain my entire payroll and employees during this pandemic.
Any further advice for providers who are preparing to apply or access these funds?
Well, I do think a certain amount of coordination is required by physician practices as well as health systems. Understanding the entire landscape as to what's available, Medicare and other funding sources don't want to see providers double dip. So if I get access to these funds, I may not be eligible to these funds. So a fair amount of thought needs to go into what's best for our situation. I think both physician practices and hospitals should consider creating a steering committee that has representation from finance, clinical, operations, and a medical staff. And this is a team that's going to document where revenues have been impacted and document where expenses have increased. And this committee should establish a process for tracking where those funds are utilized, because there will be audits down the road for each of these funding sources to ensure we've complied and stayed consistent with the terms. And so that's some advice I would give to providers seeking funds here today.
Jim, I think that's great feedback in reference to actually starting a steering committee. And it's also made up of not only clinicians, but operational leads, and a great way to actually further engage everyone. And more importantly, get ready for that audit that most likely will be occurring.
That's right.
Thanks, Jim. Great work helping us navigate some of the provisions of the Act. And for those of you listening today, I hope this helped in your efforts to deal with the economy shortfalls during this crisis. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thank you so much for listening.